The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome in as students of the game. My name is Alex Bauman, and as always, I'm joined by Gray Oldenburg and Nathan Glidewell. Now let's jump into AAA. The first story we have today is Las Vegas Raiders wide receiver Devontae Adams has been charged with misdemeanor assault following an incident last Monday night where he shoved a credentialed photographer. NFL Network insider Ian Rappaport reported that the NFL is unlikely to discipline Adams until the legal process concludes. What do y'all think about this?
I think you saw the heart-wrenching type of loss and the adrenaline after the game with Devontae Adams. Not only was he made that shove, which everybody saw, but he also was slamming his helmet on the ground after his amazing performance in that game with two amazing touchdown catches. You saw the kind of upset in his demeanor, but you can't let something like that happen. I tell you, if I was that cameraman, I would have fallen. I wouldn't have gotten up. I mean, Nathan, what kind of stuff would you do to Devontae Adams if you were that cameraman?
Oh, well, you know, he's going to get his money's worth.
Oh, yeah.
You know, after watching it, you know, you kind of feel for Devontae Adams a little bit. You know, it's heartbreaking loss. You're definitely frustrated because no one likes to lose. But just to, you know, see him do that to an innocent cameraman, you know, he's definitely in the wrong. And, you know, I want this cameraman to, you know, get his money's worth like he should. And you know, going forward, Devontae Adams just needs to be careful with how he handles losing, and he definitely can't take it out on people like this. Alex, what do you think?
I was watching the video a couple times, like a couple angles. I think the guy kind of cut Devontae off as he's walking into the tunnel, but still, it doesn't warrant him reacting that way, shoving him like he did. There's ways he could handle it better, like asking him to move out of the way, walking around him. I just think there's better ways Devontae could have handled that, and he just didn't handle it the right way. He's going to pay for it dearly. All right, the second story we have today is the Golden State Warriors have signed Jordan Poole and Andrew Wiggins contract extensions. Jordan Poole's contract is worth 4 years, $140 million, while Wiggins' contract is worth 4 years, $109 million. What do y'all think about the Warriors signing these guys to extensions?
How do they have this much money? Where's all this money coming from? They're about to, I mean, they're at $483 million. With a chance to exceed that $500 million with the additional moves that they've got, only on their 12 players that they've got. I mean, Steph is at, what, $200-something million. They've got Clay. They've got Draymond still on contract. Now they get Poole and Wiggins. They're going to have to try and sign James Wiseman here in a year or two. I don't know how they've got this much money, but it's impressive nonetheless.
Yeah, I mean, I think this move by the Warriors re-signing Jordan Poole and Andrew Wiggins is basically just telling everyone they're not going to re-sign Draymond Green this coming offseason, especially, I think, after the incident with Jordan Poole. I think that definitely was a factor in this decision-making. And honestly, I was just so surprised to see them offer these contracts back-to-back in the same day. It's definitely big news for Warrior fans. But if you want to look at their future going forward, they're not going to be able to trade or do anything like that. So, Alex, what do you think?
It kind of just handicaps the Warriors with all these players they have on contract. They're going to have to move on from Draymond, most likely. Clay might be the next one to go, even though he's one of the Splash Brothers. He's just getting up there in age. Either that or Steph and them and Clay are going to have to take pay cuts to help keep this team together. Yeah. All right, Nathan, I know it's going to be a difficult segment for you to talk about it, but can you recap college football from the weekend?
You know, This weekend, we looked into it going forward. We knew how big it was going to be. And unfortunately, number 3 Alabama did end up losing to number 6 Tennessee. For most of the game, it just looked like complete dominance from Tennessee. Alabama's defense could not get stops. And then, you had a period where Alabama fought back and they eventually took the lead. It was like 35-34. And Bryce Young was all over the place. He was 35-52, 455 passing yards and two touchdowns. Then Jahmyr Gibbs with another big game, you know, really hearing his name a lot. But, you know, the real question was the mental errors Alabama made. You know, one of the biggest ones was Quindarius Robinson trying to recover that punt, and, you know, we didn't touch it. And, you know, of course, that gifted Tennessee 7 points. But, you know, it's not all about Alabama's mistakes. Tennessee, you know, really played a really great game. Hendon Hooker, you know, we knew he was great coming into this game, and he proved it even more here with 21, 30, 384 passing yards and five touchdowns. It's unbelievable. And, you know, Jalen Hyatt, you know, 207 yards and five touchdowns as a wide receiver. He was all over the place. It was constant. He was just behind every single defender in the end zone. Gray, if we watch this together, can you go ahead and break it down from an outside perspective?
Yeah, I think this is from a college football fan's perspective, this was the exact game that we wanted to watch and wanted to see on Saturday. I believe the two of the three best teams in the country, I think, were on the field Saturday in Neyland Stadium. And Tennessee had the last play. And I thought the whole time, I was like, whoever's got the ball last is going to win this game, no matter where they are, no matter what the situation is. And that was just how good of a game it was. I'll tell you, a guy on Alabama I was really impressed with is Jamari Gibbs. He continues to prove that he's one of the top backs in not just the SEC, but in the country. I think Bill O'Brien and the Alabama offense needs to find more ways to get him the ball in space, you know, keep throwing it to him out of the backfield, keep running it behind that offensive line, who has shown that they can create holes for guys like Gibbs and even like Jace McClellan. But another guy for Tennessee that I was like, you mentioned his name, Jalen Hyatt. With the absence of Cedric Tillman for Tennessee, he has stepped up in a huge, huge way. I mean, six catches, 207 yards, five touchdowns. That's a Randy Moss kind of game, and he had it against Alabama. But the big story of this game is obviously the penalties and some of the calls. You know, you can't individually blame a ref on a call or on the game or changing the outcome of a game. And I will continue to say that, whether it's either way, whether whoever won this game, no matter what level of football you're on. But Alabama's mental errors, the 17 penalties for 130 yards, most are in the Saban error. You know, I think a lot of that had to do with the crowd and the big atmosphere of the game, but you can't make those mental errors, especially against an offense like Tennessee, when they can just take the ball and score it anytime they want. Alex, I know you watched this game from a Alabama's fan perspective, but kind of also an outsider perspective. What did you see from Tennessee that proved that they are one of the top teams of the SEC and in the country?
I mean, they just game planned really well for Alabama's defense. They just made it to where Alabama's defense was like almost a non-factor this game. Will Anderson, I don't know where he was. He really didn't affect the game as much as I would have liked to see from him. But Jalen Hyatt was just dominating Terry Arnold and the safety help from DeMarco Helms. I think the Alabama defense needs to go back to the drawing board. This wasn't a great showing from them. Might be one of the worst showings I've ever seen at watching Alabama play defense. But I think Hendon Hooker really solidified himself as the Heisman this year with the performance he had against Alabama.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the penalties, Gray, and, you know, blaming a ref for, you know, making a mistake. We're all human here. We make mistakes. You can't really just, you know, blame them solely for the game. And, you know, unfortunately, you have to have adversity in these type of situations, and Alabama did not prove that. And, you know, maybe this coming week they can, you know, rebound and show that they are, you know, one of the best teams in the country still. And, you know, I think this game definitely proves that Tennessee, you know, people slept on Tennessee this year. Yep. And I personally did not believe Tennessee was as good as they were, and they came out and proved me wrong. So let's go ahead and get into our next matchup. It's Auburn versus number 9, Ole Miss, where Ole Miss ended up winning 48-34. Gray, we watched this one together, so I'm going to go ahead and let you break down what you saw.
Again, you said breakdown. That's exactly what this segment will continue to be called, the Gray's Mental Breakdown segment. But Ole Miss came out and did whatever they wanted for the first 15 minutes of this game. got up 21-0, and I was like, okay, so are we leaving Brian Harsin in the locker room at halftime, or are we, what's the plan here, guys? Like, this is ridiculous. This is terrible. Had Robbie Ashford and Tank Bigsby arguing on the sideline, had some of the, had our defense like completely gassed because we were going three and out, and Ole Miss was just driving it and driving it and driving it. The time of possession was ridiculous in this game. But you saw Auburn's response. You saw Auburn's ability to run the ball now, especially because Ole Miss was running a 3-2-6, and they were not going to let us pass it. But okay, that's fine. We won't pass it. Then we've got Tank Bigsby and Jarquez Hunter. Bigsby gets 20 carries for 179 yards and two touchdowns. That's by far his best game this year. And Jarquez Hunter had his big carry, but also had 10 carries for 80 yards. And Robbie Ashford had 15 carries for 35 yards and two touchdowns. Auburn ran the ball with ease in this game and got back into the game. And the big call of the onside kick, you know, because Auburn had cut it to 7, and then Ole Miss scored and then got the onside kick and then went down and scored again to go up back up 14, was the play of the game, was the call of the game, maybe the call of the year for Lane Kiffin. But Auburn's defense, giving up 48 points to Ole Miss, that's a problem. But why did they give up 48 points to Ole Miss? Jackson Dart did not have a good game throwing the ball. I mean, he had three touchdowns. He also had the interception, but he only threw the ball for 130 yards. Auburn's pass defense continues to show that they're the best part of Auburn's team, you know, with the stopping of Jalen Daniels against LSU and then the good game that, I mean, Stinson Bennett wasn't able to get anything through the air, and Jackson Dart wasn't able to get anything in the air. Auburn's pass defense has been great. It's Auburn's rush defense, like the linebackers in such terrible spots all the time. I mean, Ole Miss had 448 yards rushing in this game, 115 yards to Jackson Dart, 139 yards with Judkins, and 136 yards with Zach Evans. I mean, that's, you can't win games, especially on the road in the SEC West, where you're giving up that sort of yardage. Nathan, I know you watched this from an outsider's perspective as well as you, Alex. What did you see from Ole Miss in the game? To what can they prove to us that they are up there with Georgia, Alabama, Tennessee to be one of those top teams in the SEC?
Well, they definitely proved that their offense is very dominant. And you know, I can go ahead and compare them to an offense like Alabama, an offense like Tennessee. You know, they didn't really pass or have – you know, and in fact, passing the ball this game. But, you know, you identified how much they ran the ball and had success doing that. And it really brings to mind that this offense is, you know, it's not a one-trick horse. It's all over the place, and it really has no limits, in my opinion. You had someone like Jonathan Mingo. He didn't have a single catch, yet they scored 48 points still. So, you know, you like seeing that from Ole Miss and Lane Kiffin. But, you know, an even bigger question is their defense gave up 34 points to this Auburn offense, and they were not able to stop the run. And I think, like, the biggest question going forward for Ole Miss is how can they make adjustments to limit, you know, scoring from other teams? Alex, what are your thoughts on this game?
I think Ole Miss's defense has been great all year till this game, to be honest with you. And even though they gave up 34 points, they did have some good stats. They had three sacks, seven tackles for loss, and two passes defended, and two interceptions. But yeah, I mean, their rush offense is really good. Their two running backs. How did Auburn let Judkins get out of the state of Alabama?
I don't know. You go back and watch interviews from him in high school. Somebody asked him, and I saw while the game was going on, I saw this. And he said he's been an Auburn fan his whole life. And Auburn told him, Brian Harsin went and told him he's not SEC caliber. Like, are you kidding me?
Like, he knows what that is.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I can't believe that either. But, you know, Auburn, you know, he's going downhill. And sir, I know we've continued to mention this, but Brian Harsin is still the coach. Mm-hmm. What do you think about that?
I think if something were to happen in a change of the coaching and the leadership, it is going to have to happen after Auburn hires an athletic director. I think Auburn goes and hires an athletic director during the bye week that they have this week. They have 2 weeks before we play Arkansas at home. And I think you've got to go find an athletic director. And then you've got from the Arkansas game to the, you know, the Alabama game to evaluate if you want to make a change. And obviously a change is, you know, projected and probably going to happen due to the inability to score and to win football games here in the SEC, as well recruit in the SEC from Brian Harsin and his staff. But how do you make that change? You've got to hire an athletic director first. You know, Alan Green left as the before the season started this year. When do you make that change? Because recruiting is going to start picking up really fast soon. You got the early signing period in December. You've got to be able to have your guy ready to, you know, get in next year and start preparing this Auburn team.
Yeah, that's definitely a lot of big key factors there. And Alex, I had a really crucial question for you. You know, after this game on Saturday, at the end of the season, do you think Auburn is bowl eligible?
Probably not. Maybe the Birmingham Bowl, but most likely not.
I would say probably not as well. I think your best chance to win from now on is Arkansas and obviously Western Kentucky, although Western Kentucky has proven that they can really score the football and put points on the board. But, you know, you've seen Arkansas kind of take a step back. I think you could really run the ball against them, although you're going to have to stop their run. But that game's at home. Texas A&M is at home. I don't think you win that. I don't think you go to Mississippi State or to Alabama and win either. So probably not.
All right, let's go ahead and move on to number 5 Michigan versus number 10 Penn State. That was their game of the week. Michigan did not keep it close and won 41-17. Quarterback J.J. McCarthy was 17-24, 145 yards. And had an interception. Really not really impressive for him, but Michigan's run game continues to get it done. Gray, what do you think about this?
I think Penn State, without the long run by Sean Clifford or the fumble return for a touchdown, or the fumble return for a touchdown, or it was an interception.
Interception.
This game is 41-3. So I think Penn State got what happened to them, what they did to Auburn to them in this game against Michigan. Michigan's run offense. I mean, Crum and Edwards were absolutely dominant in this game. And it's proven to me that Michigan is not, you know, the second to Ohio State again this year. They could be that top team. Alex, I know you watch this one from an outsider perspective, just like us. So what do you see from this Michigan team that is now starting to prove a little more and more as the season goes on?
I think they have probably the best offensive line in the country. It really opens up these holes for these running backs. J.J. McCarthy has not really shown that much as a quarterback. I think Michigan's offense is built very similarly to Georgia's, so I think that'd be a good matchup to see in the college football playoff if they both were able to make it.
Yeah, I think after, you know, watching Michigan for a while now, is the main question, how can, you know, they figure out this quarterback situation? And let's say a team they, you know, play against, you know, you bring up Ohio State, they stop the run. What does Michigan do after that? And it's really a big question going forward. Can they figure out their passing game? All right, some other big games from the week. You had number 20 Utah beating number 7 USC 43-42 in a really great late matchup. You also had number 13 TCU coming from behind to beat number 8 Oklahoma State 43-40 in 2 overtimes. And then number 18 Syracuse beat number 15 NC State 24-9. Number 22 Kentucky beat number 16 Mississippi State 27-17. Oklahoma beat number 19 Kansas 52-42. And North Carolina beat Duke 38-35. You know, a real big game I want to get into here is number 20 Utah beating number 7 USC. Gray, what are your thoughts on Utah, you know, really pulling this one out late?
They've really stepped it up since the loss at Florida in week 1. And I'm not dogging USC here. I think USC played a great game. The Utah atmosphere there is crazy. I think Utah has gotten better and better as the weeks have gone on. And I think they could be a contention to compete against a team like Oregon for the top of the Pac-12. I don't think that gets anything like the playoff or anything like that, but you know, that's a big, big time win from Utah. Alex, what's another game that you saw this weekend besides the games that we just you know, went over that really caught your eye?
Number 13 TCU beating number 8 Oklahoma State. That was a big game for me. I love watching TCU be successful.
Yeah.
Since Trayvon Boykin, yeah.
After seeing them down early, I didn't think they would pull it out.
Yeah, I mean, if they went out, they have a good chance of making the college football playoff. And I think they have a good chance of doing that.
Oh, yeah. Gray, I'm going to go ahead and let you recap the NFL from this week.
Yeah, we'll recap the NFL this week. Obviously, the game of the week was the Bills versus the Chiefs. The Bills ended up winning that 24-20 with a go-ahead touchdown from Allen to Dawson Knox. Josh Allen ended up 27-40 for 329 yards, 3 touchdowns, and 12 carries for 32 yards and a fumble. Running back Devin Singletary had 17 carries for 85 yards. Wide receiver Stephon Diggs continues to be absolutely dominant. 10 receptions, 148 yards, and a touchdown. And then for the Chiefs, they dropped to 4-2 now. This quarterback, Patrick Mahomes, went 25-40 for 338 yards, 2 touchdowns, and 2 interceptions. And then wide receiver Juju Smith-Schuster had 5 catches for 113 yards and a touchdown. And tight end Travis Kelce, again, continues to be dominant, coming off his 4 touchdown performance last week. Gets 8 catches for 108 yards. I know y'all both watched this game and really were excited about the offenses. But what were the, this kind of a defensive slugfest for a little bit. What did you see from the defenses of these two teams that caught your eye?
Yeah, late in the game, of course, the ceiling interception by the Bills defense. And really, it was one of the things where you were kind of having flashbacks to last year where the Bills had went up and scored late, but you thought they gave the Chiefs too much time. And their defense made the play to, seal the game. And, really, it wasn't one of those high-scoring matchups like we usually see between these two. So, I mean, the defense has really got it done. I saw, them force several punts early in the game. And, Alex, I know, defense is a really big thing for you. What did you identify from this game that was a really big factor from the defenses?
I think the Bills really stepped up. Their run defense was really well. They held Clyde Edwards-Helaire to 33 carries. But I also think the Bills' secondary did really well, especially Taron Johnson getting the interception. But I was really impressed with the Bills' defense, less than with the Chiefs. The Chiefs were missing two of their best DBs with Brian Cook and Rashawn Fenton. But, yeah, it was really a good defensive battle to watch on the field.
Yeah, absolutely. Just like you mentioned, the Bills' defense, Alex, they had 3 sacks and 9 quarterback hits. It really did look like that's how you beat Patrick Mahomes. That's how you get to him. You pressure him. You get him, make him go out of the pocket. You get him looking at the line instead of receivers downfield. But I'll go ahead and pass it off to you, Alex, to preview some of what we've got coming from college and pro football from this upcoming weekend.
Yeah, this weekend for college football, we got number 6 Alabama versus number 24 Mississippi State. Number 9 UCLA versus number 10 Oregon. Number 5 Clemson versus number 14 Syracuse. Number 11 Oklahoma State versus number 20 Texas. Number 9 Ole Miss versus LSU. Number 16 Penn State versus Minnesota. Number 8 TCU versus number 17 Kansas State. And number 7 Ole Miss versus LSU. What game sticks out to y'all?
Ooh, I'm really excited to see how both Alabama and Mississippi State bounce back in Tuscaloosa this weekend. Alabama obviously coming off the loss to Tennessee. How does their defense react to a completely different system, but kind of the same kind of style when it comes to slinging the ball around with Mississippi State? And how does Mississippi State react to only scoring 17 points against Kentucky? How do they come out and play against this Alabama defense? Nathan, what about you?
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and look at number 5 Clemson versus number 14 Syracuse. Syracuse continues to have such a great season, and could this be the week that they finally pull off the upset against Clemson? We don't know.
All right, previewing some NFL from this upcoming weekend. You have the Saints versus Cardinals, Buccaneers versus Panthers, Falcons versus Bengals, Lions versus Cowboys, Colts versus Titans, Packers versus Commanders, Giants versus Jaguars, Browns versus Ravens, Jets versus Broncos, Texans versus Raiders, Seahawks versus Chargers, Chiefs versus 49ers, Steelers versus Dolphins, and Bears versus Patriots. Which games stick out to y'all?
Ooh. I like the Saints versus Cardinals on the Thursday night football game. I think you saw the injury with Marquise Brown with the Cardinals. Now they just traded for Robbie Anderson. What do they do to get that offense back on track, assuming – DeAndre Hopkins will come back. I believe he'll be back not this week, but next week. if I'm right. So what do the Cardinals do to get a little rhythm offensively after losing Brown? And what do the Saints do after playing really well against the Bengals? How do they respond from losing that game late? What about you, Nathan?
Yeah, I think one of the games I'm most excited for is the Steelers versus Dolphins. I think Tua is probably going to return in this game. I think he was ready to return this weekend. And really, this weekend showed how much the Dolphins missed him as their quarterback when they fell short versus the Vikings. And, you know, for the Steelers, they're coming off a big win versus Tampa Bay. And I think really it's one of those games where, hey, we're going to prove that our season's turning upward. And for the loser of this game, I think it's really, you know, them probably going to miss the playoffs. So.
All right. So NBA season starts this week, guys.
Hallelujah.
What are y'all's predictions for the NBA champion at the end of the season?
Ooh, I think the NBA champion, I think it's whoever comes out of the West. I think the East is very good. I think the East is getting deeper and deeper as, you know, as we go on, with obviously the Cavs going and getting Donovan Mitchell. The Celtics are good. The Bucks are always good. The Nets are back. The 76ers are back. The Heat are very good. So I think the East is very deep, but I think whoever comes out of the West will win the championship. And I think it's the Golden State Warriors again for the second straight year. What about you, Nathan?
Yeah, I know it's been mentioned a lot, and people really like to pick this as a dark horse team, but, you know, the Clippers continue to have one of the best rosters in the NBA, and unfortunately they haven't put it together yet, and I think they finally put it together this year, and I think they'll be the NBA champions at the end of the season.
You stole my choice, Nathan. I was going to pick the Clippers too.
Come on. Mine's thinking like.
If I had to add another team there, it'd probably have to be the Milwaukee Bucks with Giannis.
Yeah, that's a good team too.
I like it.
All right. What about the MVP? What do y'all think?
If it's not Luka Doncic, I don't know who it is. He's fantastic. He's the best white player we've seen since Dirk Nowitzki or Larry Bird. He's absolutely amazing. And he's fun. It's so much fun to watch. I think if Dallas kind of builds around Luka this upcoming year and he stays healthy, I think he's prime for that MVP type of year.
Nathan, what about you?
You know, this is a really hard choice for me, but I think that Joel Embiid finally gets his MVP. He's been close so many years. Yeah. And I think this is the year he pulls it off.
Gotta stay healthy.
Gotta stay healthy. Yeah. I'm gonna have to go with Gray there. Same with Gray and choose with Luka Doncic. I think he's destined for a great year this year.
Great minds think alike.
Yes, sir. All right. So what up, Rookie of the Year? Gray, I know you like Jabari Smith, but
I do like Jabari Smith, and I'll steer away from Jabari in this, though, even though he did have the best preseason game of any rookie, was going 5 of 7 and 21 points, and then he hurt his ankle in the last game of practice or whatever before the next game. But I really like Keegan Murray for Sacramento. I think, yeah, you're looking at Paolo Banchero. I don't like that fit at all. The Jaden Ivey, I like that, but I think the Pistons have more weapons than the Kings do. I think the Kings could utilize Murray a lot better, and he's showed in the summer league that he was a great shooter and much improved than he was at Iowa. I'm going with Keegan Murray. What about you, Nathan?
I think Benedict Mathurin is going to be a insane weapon for the Pacers coming up. I think he's going to get a lot of work. He's going to have the ball in his hands a lot, and he's going to be a real scoring factor for the Pacers. And I know we've had a lot of, you know, insight to his kind of beef with LeBron this offseason, saying that he is, in fact, better than him. And, you know, I'm not saying that he will be, but I'm saying he's going to be a pretty good player this year, and I think he'll be good enough to win Rookie of the Year. What about you, Alex?
I like Paolo Banchero just because of the fit he has with Orlando. I think they're putting something together with all these young guys. I think he has a chance to solidify himself as that number one option. So I looked at him to maybe run away with the award. All right, for Sixth Man of the Year, who are y'all looking at for this award?
We talked about him in the AAA earlier in the show. But I think it's Jordan Poole. He's going to be on the bench because Clay and Steph both are going to be in the starting lineup. So you bring him immediately off the bench, and you don't lose anything from losing Clay or putting Clay on the bench. He's shown that he has been a superstar, especially in this past year's playoff run that Golden State had to go win the championship. I think he's fantastic. He's getting better and better as the years go on. I think he's got a chance for an all-star type of year. I think he wins sixth man of the year.
Wow, just stealing all the good picks.
Hey, great minds think alike. It's just you don't have to go different from me.
I think, you know, after looking at, you know, someone like Tyler Hero and, you know, Christian Wood, of course, is going to come off the bench in Dallas this year. I think that Jordan Poole, after watching him last year, he really was a great scoring option for the Warriors. And he really, you know, reminded me of someone like Steph Curry or Klay Thompson. So, of course, I think he's going to prove himself yet again this year, and I think he'll take the Sixth Man of the Year award. Alex, can you make it three?
I can give you a third one. I think Kevin Love has a great chance to win Sixth Man of the Year. He was in contention for it last year. I think the Cavs are just so much better than they were a year ago. And I think he has a chance to even improve on what he was able to do. All right. For Defensive Player of the Year, which player are y'all identifying?
Nathan, you're going to go first on this one.
Yeah, someone that we don't have listed for some reason, but, you know, by far one of the best defenders in the league.
Oh, Lord. Here we go.
It is Herb Jones. Herb Jones is winning Defensive Player of the Year.
I thought he was too.
No, after what I watched last year, he is such an underrated pick for Defensive Player of the Year. He didn't even make an all defensive team last year, and he should have. He should have been first team. And this year, he will win Defensive Player of the Year. Gray, what do you think?
I like Herb Jones. I don't like that we don't have him listed on this. I also don't like that we don't have Lou Dort listed on this. But talking about a defensive player of the year, they've got to put up defensive stats and got to be able to stop guys like the offensive juggernauts in the league. I think it's Giannis Antetokounmpo. I think he's the best overall defender. He's going to block shots. He's going to steal passes. He's going to be in the passing lane. You're not going to be able to get around him due to his length and his size. You're not going to be able to get up over him over his athleticism. So I think it's Giannis. I think it's Giannis. He could get it. He could win it any year he wanted to. What about you, Alex?
I think Mikal Bridges or Bam Adebayo have a great chance of winning. Mikal Bridges, I think, was probably the best defender last year. Just kind of got the war stole from him by Marcus Smart. And Bam Adebayo, he's really showing year after year that he's one of the premier paint defenders in the league. And I swear, if I see Rudy Gobert win this award one more time, I might riot. I might. All right, for the most improved, who are y'all looking at to win this award?
Ooh, I like both of the top guys that we have listed on this, Tyrese Haliburton and Anthony Edwards. Obviously, both of those guys are going to take complete huge steps forward in terms of role, in terms of how much they're going to be relied on, especially to score the ball. Anthony Edwards, you're talking about now he's got two all-star centers on his team and you still got D'Angelo Russell. So make him that primary offensive scorer. I think the Timberwolves have a chance to be very good, but also Tyrese Haliburton taking that next step for Indiana. You know, Nathan mentioned Benedict Mathurin, have him on that team. Now you got Miles Turner back. You're starting to build and make the East even deeper. What about you, Nathan?
If this person can stay healthy, I think Shai Gilgeous-Alexander will be the most improved player. He's proved what he can do every single year, and unfortunately, it's ended, you know, with a season-ending injury the past few years. And really, he is, you know, the first option for this OKC Thunder team, a team that's really, you know, not a threat to anything this year. We're gonna lose so many games, but Shai will be a bright spot on this team, and I think he'll win the most improved player this year. Alex, what do you think?
I think RJ Barrett's a player that can take another jump leap forward. He did last year, but I think with the addition of Jalen Brunson, he can do even more with having somebody that can actually handle the ball next to him. So I think I looked RJ Barrett to maybe win this award. All right, that's all for the NBA we have for today. Just a little reflect back on the next the football next week. Our games of the week are going to be for college, number 9 UCLA versus number 10 Oregon. And for the NFL, we have the Browns versus Ravens. And that is this coming weekend with those games. All right, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you for listening to Students of the Game.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.